Molly Tuttle has sort of entered into that those becoming category. Very young. She is nominated this year for 3 IBMA awards, one of which, and we'll talk about all those in the second hour of the show, one of those is for Guitar Player of the Year, first time ever that a female artist in the history of IBMA, first time ever that a female artist has been nominated as Guitar Player of the Year. We're going to visit with Molly Tuttle. You're going to enjoy this, and I'll tell you something, too. In the conversation, you will hear us talk about a very special moment at a live concert at the venue where we were had first met, a young woman named Claire Brown, who is a friend of Molly Tuttle's, 10 years old, got on stage with Molly, and we'll talk a little bit about what that means in the last hour of the show. I'm really happy to welcome Molly Tuttle to Unreal Bluegrass. How are you, Molly?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm so happy to get a chance to talk to you. When we just kind of crossed paths a little bit a couple of weeks ago up at Gray Fox, which was a blast. I saw the band that you had there. I want to talk to you a little bit about those performances. And I also saw you performing with Joe Newberry. And,
yeah, it was so much fun. It was a busy day, but
you were
really an awesome thing.
You were really busy. And so since then, though, I've gotten a whole lot of great news. When we all got back home, and we find out that you've been nominated for all these awards for IBMA for emerging artist, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Female vocalist.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw this, I thought, wait a minute, has this ever happened before? You've been nominated for Guitar Player of the Year, and I kept thinking this has to be the first. And we looked through it, and yeah, you're the first female nominated for Guitar Player of the Year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that part didn't hit me at all when I first saw it. I was kind of stunned just to see my name next to Brian Sutton and Jim Hirsch and Cody Kilby. And then hours later in the day, I saw a quote, like Rolling Stone wrote something about me being the first woman, and I was like, I almost started crying.
Well, we were talking, Molly, before we went on the air, that I've seen you, I think, I'm going to say 3 times. And of those 3 times, several times within, because I've seen you at Gray Fox around. And your guitar playing, and I know you've been on Guitar Player magazines, different acoustic guitar, which I used to get. Here's what I will say about your playing, and we're going to pull this back to California and how you get to Berkeley and things in between there. But I will say this as an audience member, and I think this is indicative of something special. When I watch you play, you are one of the most efficient, or I would say economical, players with your left hand. I mean, does this make sense? Am I saying anything that makes sense musically at all? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And explain a little bit to the audience what I'm trying to explain. Is when I watch you, I'm thinking, it doesn't look like all those notes are coming out of there, but you have obviously a design of what you're playing and how you're doing it. What does that mean to the audience?
Right. I mean, I've worked on that a lot, especially when I was first starting to play. My dad taught me how to play guitar, and I think I was really lucky that he understood kind of how to train your hands to be a little bit more efficient, like especially the left hand. He had exercises that I would do to help train my hand not to just move as little as possible when I'm going up and down the fingerboard. And then he would show me videos of like Tony Rice, who you watch him playing and barely even can tell his fingers are moving.
Right.
The most efficient. So that was something I always kind of was aware of and would work on in the early days, and then I think just building good habits. And I would have to credit my dad for just showing me different exercises to do to build efficiency with left hand.
Well, I want to talk about your dad, Jack Tuttle, but I also want to say that I believe the skill you developed indicates a really not only physically being able to do it with your left hand, and of course your right hand too, it gets busy, but it also demonstrates a remarkable knowledge of the fretboard, which everybody out there has probably thought about. How do you find these notes? You know what you're looking for, and you've got it already figured out, I think.
I don't know. I think for me, like the more I learn about the fingerboard, I feel like the less I realize the less I know, or the more there is to know.
Okay. let's get you then, and we're going to get you up to this Rise album, which I got in the mail long before I went to Gray Fox this year. I want to talk about, there are seven tunes on there. We'll talk about that in a minute, but let's tell the audience, and you've done this before, but you're from California. Your father's Jack Tuttle, you've mentioned a little bit. Get us a little bit from what you've learned from your father, your experiences in California, then to Berkeley, mm-hmm. and then I want to talk about this album, if you can do that.
Yeah. Well, I grew up in the Bay Area, in Palo Alto, which is like an hour south of San Francisco, and it's mostly known for like tech companies. But my dad has always, I guess, for the past like over 30 years, he's worked out of a little music store right in Palo Alto called Griffin Stringed Instruments, and he has a room where he teaches out of. So he's teaching private lessons and group lessons, and he's just taught there for a long time. So I always heard him playing music and would kind of meet some of his students who were around the same age or similar age as me, who I saw playing, like Brittany Haas lived right in the area too, so I would get to see her, and my dad play square dances and stuff. So it was always kind of in the back of my head that I really wanted to play music. And I started off taking Suzuki violin lessons when I was really young because I really wanted to play fiddle. But it didn't really, I think I was maybe only like 4 or 5, and I didn't realize that you actually have to practice. So I realized that I didn't want to play it anymore, and then tried to play piano too, and it was kind of the same thing. But then one day, I think I said I wanted a guitar, and my dad brought home like a little baby Taylor guitar, and he would just show me maybe like a tune or just a chord every now and then when I was in the mood to play it, and that's what made it more appealing to me, that it was just kind of a relaxed thing that I could do with my dad when I wanted to.
And you were, and by the way, Griffin, I've ordered things from there before. I know who your father is. I don't know him, but I know of by the name. So, yeah, I actually have things flying around my office here with my instruments that came from there directly. So it's a very well-known and respected music store for the things they can provide. Unique things, too. It really is. All right, so now I know this from having seen you in a workshop, we'll call it, with Joe Newberry at Grey Fox, that you have a lot of you draw from a lot of resources, one of which, and this is more happy news for you, is that you mentioned when Joe asked you under one of the tents up at Grey Fox about influences or inspirations, you mentioned Hazel Dickens. Now I want you to talk a little bit about that, how a young girl in San Francisco draws on those influences, and then we can announce, you can help announce what maybe the rest of the world knows about Hazel Dickens.
Yeah. Well, I guess it started with just hearing her records around the house. Again, like, my parents, well, my mom's also a big music fan, and they would both put on records, and Hazel's voice, I think, just really stood out to me, because it didn't sound like any other singers that I'd heard, and something about the song, she has such an original sound, and it comes so from the heart that I think it always really just struck me, and so I think I was in middle school when I first heard her, and I really asked my dad, like, who is that? I need to know who that is, and started learning her songs, and her songs were, I think her song Fueled Memories was the first song I ever, I remember practicing it over and over again and trying to sound just like her and do every little turn she did in her voice, so she was kind of the first really big influence and hero for me, and also inspired me to write my own songs, too. And then I got to see her at Hardly Strictly Bluegrass when I was a teenager a few times. She would always come out and perform at that in Golden Gate Park in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. So that was super exciting, always to see her play. And then, yeah, a couple weeks ago, just found out that she and Alice Gerard are being inducted to IVMA Hall of Fame, which is really exciting.
It is exciting.
I've been waiting for that for a long time. So.
Well, interesting, and for the audience, if you haven't heard Molly sing or play, first of all, you need to. But secondly, you're not attempting to sing like her at all. Now, I think you draw inspiration from the words and her and the passion in her voice, maybe. But no one's going to hear you and think, close their eyes and think, Molly Tuttle is reproducing the sounds of Hazel Dickens. That's not what it's about, correct?
Yeah, I think I mean, at first I really did try to copy her, and then I realized, well, she's just singing in her natural voice, and my natural voice doesn't sound like her. So I didn't try to mimic her, but just find my own original voice, hopefully.
Okay, now, Molly, we're talking to Molly Tuttle, if you're just tuning in. Molly, then, from this experience, and I'm sure we could go into more depth as other things as you're growing up in that musical environment, how do you get from the San Francisco, the Bay Area, to Berkeley?
Well, I remember I was, like, nearing the end of my junior year and I knew of a lot of older friends who were musicians who I really admired who were at Berkeley or living in Boston. So that's when I first started I was also, that's when I was first starting to think, like, maybe I want to go to school for music. Before that, I was thinking I would get, like, a degree in something else. Like, I really liked English and just other subjects. So that's when I started getting serious about music and looking into schools that I could go to. And Berklee had the American Roots program, which had great bluegrass musicians teaching. And, like, Daryl Inger was teaching there. He was a big hero of mine. And so I was looking at that and thinking, well, that's kind of a unique thing. And just looking into schools, a lot of them were more classically based, and Berklee seemed to have, like, almost every genre you could imagine and always these new teachers coming through and doing residencies. And, yeah, so it seemed like a really cool way to get exposed to a lot of different kinds of music and learn about songwriting and kind of had a lot of different options.
And, and Molly, you know this, and I think this audience knows because Daryl's been a guest on this program, and I'm a big fan of Daryl Inger. He brings music from everywhere. Mm-hmm. Everywhere, and
he
just does it all. He calls himself the free roaming fiddle player or something when he was on the program, which just cracked me. You just never know where he's going to show up, but it's always good music, and it always makes sense. I guess Mr. Sun was the last project I saw him touring with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love Mr. Sun.
So you go to Berklee now, and I did talk to Joe Newberry. I mentioned before we went on that I asked Joe this question about. The young talent coming through Berklee. I mean, you have this talent, you have this ability that you learned on the West Coast with your father, and I stress this a lot, there's so much music, acoustic and bluegrass in California that some people on the other side of the Continental Divide don't recognize, but it's so prevalent there.
So it is.
Well, I mean, the scene out there just must be amazing. I know my good friend Bill Evans lives somewhere in that Bay Area also.
Yeah, Bill, I grew up seeing Bill at festivals, and he's a good friend, and also getting to see, like, Laurie Lewis play with her band, and Kathy Kallick.
Oh, yeah.
I think they were big heroes for me, too, and didn't realize at the time that it was so lucky to have two women who were leading their own bands, like, in such close proximity. I think I realized later on, like, wow, that was probably a really big deal for me, and I didn't even realize it when I was growing up.
Well, I think we've all benefited from the fact that you had those inspirations, and now we get to talk about what Berklee does then. When you have all this inspiration, this knowledge, and you go to a program like Berklee, do you pick up a lot of things, I assume, performance issues? Is it theory? What would be, in a nutshell, what do you draw from Berklee that then you would reinterpret these songs or write your own songs that you think might be attributable to your experience there?
Yeah, kind of a bit of everything. They have to take core theory classes, so you're going through your training and music theory, and most of the theory is jazz harmony based. And then once you get further up, you start learning a little bit of classical theory as well. But I took the basic jazz theory classes through Harmony 4. And then you kind of get to choose what avenue you want to go down. So I took a lot of songwriting classes where they have you, a lot of them would have you write a song lead and critique the songs and give you different themes or prompts for each week. But then my main focus, I guess, was guitar. So I was in the guitar department. So I had private lessons each week. And most of my teachers were electric guitar players who played like jazz or blues or classical. So that was kind of cool. At first I was like, oh, I wish they had a bluegrass guitar teacher here. But then I think it was actually a blessing in disguise because it made me get out of my comfort zone. And I think I could already kind of find my way around a bluegrass tune at that point. But my teachers who really pushed me to study other styles of music, which kind of helped my bluegrass playing in ways that I didn't know that it was going to help it.
And probably your playing and your writing, too, once you've expanded those concepts. And Rise, by the way, the album that I have, is seven tunes. You wrote all of them. One of them is strictly an instrumental, but you wrote all of these tunes, correct?
Yeah, some of them I co-wrote. I guess Friend and a Friend I co-wrote with Corby Lenker, who's another singer-songwriter in Nashville.
Okay. In all of these tunes, I will say, if I try to describe them, there's seven on here. One, Supermoon, is, by the way, if you want to hear Molly, and maybe a good example of why Molly is nominated for Guitar Player of the Year, listen to Supermoon, because That's just and Wes Corbett. I think Wes Corbett's banjo playing on this album, on that tune in particular, he has the ultimate taste and feel and background and for the whole tune. Listen to Supermoon, but you wrote all these tunes, and you say you co-wrote "Friend of a Friend." Other than Supermoon and Walden, they all seem to me to be personal, and by that I don't mean necessarily autobiographical. Mm-hmm. They could be, but they seem to be more personal relationship than Walden, as we'll talk about. But I mean, am I accurate on that?
Yeah, not all of them are directly from my experience, but all of them are kind of from a personal point of view, like either talking to another person or just describing your own experience. So I think I relate to that, all of them, in some way. Some of them are more autobiographical than others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, and I understand that good enough, you know, that could relate to a lot of things. It could be a relationship status. It could be a work that you're in, or a project or a song that you're working on.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most, personal ones for me on there. And it wasn't exactly one thing in particular that I was writing about, more just kind of a feeling, I guess.
Yeah, it's basically, I think, Molly, what it's saying is, look, everything doesn't have to be absolutely perfect in whatever you're working on, life or in writing music or singing, but, you know, at some point it's going to be good enough, and you need to accept that and move on.
You want to, keep moving forward.
And the friend and a friend, that tune is interesting to me. Well, all of them are, but that tune, as you mentioned, you co-wrote. That is also you saying, look, I think this is what the song is saying, that, you know, all these things go on, but you have friends and you have people around you, and as long as you have these things, I don't want to talk about all these songs in detail. I don't want to take up most of your time, but writing that song and the concept of a friend and a friend. Can you talk a little bit about that? What you're talking about? I didn't want to shortchange you there. But.
Oh yeah, no. I wrote that with my friend Corby, and we both tour a lot. And he had been touring for longer than I had when we wrote it. But we were both kind of at the same place where we were just on the road all the time. So we kind of started talking about that and different struggles or different things we liked about it. And then we tried to kind of put that all together in the song, and then he came up with that hook, a friend and a friend and another friend. I think it just kind of sums up, when you go along as a musician, those are the moments that make it really worthwhile, is getting to make music with your friends and just, make new friends and meet new people, and people are all kind of helping each other, lift each other up in a way.
Well, and I think part of what, at some point you need to become a touring musician. I know you've been doing a lot of that, but I think maybe touring, as you see the same faces around different venues, isn't that where you reconnect with a lot of these friends?
Yeah, definitely. It feels like a really big family that you get to see at all the festivals and venues, so it's pretty nice.
Then the other three songs, excluding Walden for a moment, You Didn't Call My Name, Save This Heart, and Lightning in a Jar, I do take those, and I think those are very personal relationship type of songs you're writing about. Am I right on
that? Yeah, those are more like relationship type songs. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are kind of personal ones. I guess Lightning in a Jar, I didn't really write that about any specific relationship, but it was kind of thinking about, seeing my grandparents on their farm in Illinois and seeing lightning bugs there. And I used to always go out there when I was a kid, so it was just this nostalgic feeling about, the big thunderstorms during the summer, and that's where I got, the title of the song, and then kind of tried to create a song about kind of just that nostalgic feeling, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. I think, and they're all great. They're all great songs. They're all great tunes. And the band, talk a little bit about, I saw you with not this exact band on this album up at Grey Fox, but talk a little bit about some of the, you have a lot of guests on this thing, but if you would consider the main band that contributed to Rise, talk about, and I've already mentioned Wes Corbett, who I'm a big fan from, Joy Kills Sorrow.
Yeah, so I guess the core band, there are a lot of awesome guests, but we had Todd Phillips playing bass on everything, and John Mylander, who I've played with for a long time, playing fiddle and octave mandolin on the album, and then John O'Ricks is playing percussion on a lot of the tracks. So that was kind of the core group, I guess. And then Kai, while she produced it, did a lot of harmony singing and different overdubs of instruments.
The And I'm looking for a label. I got this in the mail a month or so, whenever it came out. And I look on the back, and it's Molly Tuttle Music. But where would people find this? And first of all, then we'll talk about a website for you for tour information. But where would people find this Rise CD?
Yeah, you can find it, well, anywhere online, like CD Baby, I guess, is where you could order a physical copy, or iTunes, Amazon, Spotify, any of those places.
And you have a website, I suppose, that people could look up. I'm just going to take a wild guess. If they look for Molly Tuttle, they would find something that would tell where you're going to be.
Yeah, mollytuttlemusic.com.
Okay. I've seen you once. You'll probably, I assume you'll be in Raleigh at IBMA.
Yeah, I will be.
Okay, well, people can go there and find you, and I'll be there, too, hanging around. Let me ask you this, and I'm going to let you go. I'm real close to running out of time. For your sake, I can go all day, but up in Grey Fox, a very young girl came up on stage with you. Her name was Claire Brown.
Yeah.
And I just thought, I happened to be in the tent when that happened, and she just looks up to you with such admiration, knew the words to your song, and played, and she had such a great time. And I will tell the audience that in the last hour of this particular program, I met with Claire and her father, Neil. I was introduced by Ira Gitlin, a musician and a friend, and we just talked about 5 minutes about her experience up there. But as you had inspirations, and maybe you weren't aware of the fact that there were two bands locally, you know, headed up by women. You mentioned Kathleen and Lori. But when you look down at her, and I saw this moment, you're looking down at her, and I only saw the back of her head from where, but she's clearly looking straight up at you. What do you feel about that? Well, what do you feel about that transference of you recognize now that you're in that position and you're inspiring someone like a young 10-year-old Claire Brown?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of an amazing thing to see kids like Claire. I've known her for a long time, and just getting to see how she develops, and then the thought of that I might be kind of a hero for her or an inspiration for her, that she's kind of looking up to me as an example, it's kind of an awesome feeling. It gives me a sense of purpose with music, too. It's just showing, like, these kids who want to be musicians, kind of setting an example for them and just setting an example for them as people, too. It makes me try to hold myself up to a higher standard, maybe. When I see people like Claire looking up at me, I'm like, okay, I got to really think about what kind of person I want to be, what kind of musician I want to be, if I'm setting an example for this generation. But, it's a really big honor to have kids like Claire who are learning my songs and
she knew them all.
Just looking up to me, I guess.
She loved it, and I will tell you, you didn't hear it yet, but in this program we talk about she's fearless. She had a blast. She was not concerned at all about getting on the stage with her hero.
Yeah.
And this connection, the connection between you and her was, I mean, it was just all smiles, and you could just tell everybody was having a good time, and she enjoyed it thoroughly.
Yeah, I felt really proud of her.
Yeah, it's hard to do. I mean, at any age, you know, you're an experienced performer, but you have to think about those things before you get on stage. She jumped up right away and was right there with you.
I know.
That was fun.
I could not have been that confident at that age.
Well, Molly Tuttle, thanks so much for being available. And,
thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're more than welcome. Best of luck to you and Raleigh with these nominations and whatever comes of it. And again, I feel your joy and everybody rejoiced a bit and when Allison and Hazel got in, I knew. I thought, well, there's a lot's happened since I saw you in Grey Fox, and I figured you'd be thrilled about those events too. So, well, listen, best of luck. We'll find you down the road. The new album.
It's a pleasure talking with you.
Well, listen. Oh, I didn't talk about Walden. I think we can go if any of us went to high school and studied Thoreau. I kind of get the impression that it's at least inspired partly from Walden and his connection to nature.
Totally.
I think that and that may be a bigger statement we can talk about for environmental issues as we get into the program. I may play that at the end of this interview. Let me ask you this: as I close out this interview, I'll play one song at the beginning of the program. Interviews happen in the second hour. As we're ending out today, what song would you want me to play as we close out this particular portion of the program?
Oh, how about Good Enough?
Good Enough. That works. All right. So we'll do that. Thanks, Molly. I appreciate your time and your music, and best of luck to you in the future.
Totally. Yeah, I'm glad it worked out. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks.